Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Hi, welcome to an edition of Speaking of Reliability. This is Adam Barrett. I'm here at RAMS 2020, and I'm here with Dr. Trivedi. Hi.
Hello. Hello, Adam. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. And I was excited to get a chance to grab you for this podcast while you're here at the conference. And you and I were talking a little bit about some of your recent work and with software reliability. And so I just wanted to kind of continue the conversation.
Yeah. So Adam, a long time ago, one of the stalwarts in software engineering, Richard DeMello, asked me, you know, Kishore, there has been a lot of work on software reliability, but there is very little on what is called software availability. Mm. So I remember that from way back, and I think now what I have been doing for the last 5 to 10 years applies to software availability.
Interesting.
To put it in more context, software reliability traditionally deals with during the testing phase, when you are finding and fixing bugs, how does the software reliability grow? And how can you characterize that by some mathematical models which are driven by the data that is collected during testing? And then you can determine whether you've done enough testing, whether the failure intensity is low enough to release the software, or should you continue testing? And you can try and predict how the reliability in practice in operation will be. But there was never an attempt to study software availability. That is, when software is in operation, when it fails, you recover from it and then continue what fraction of time software is available.
Yeah.
And so now, with the emergence of two different phenomena, that we are able to do this. We are able to do this because what has happened is that we have identified, or we are seeing, that more and more bugs behave in a so-called non-deterministic manner. Mm-hmm. Whereas in our earlier thinking about bugs, our thinking of software bugs was that on a certain workload inputs, either that bug will be exercised causing a failure or not, in a fairly deterministic manner.
Yeah.
But we are seeing more and more bugs that don't behave like that.
Oh, really? Okay.
So the inputs that are given by the users to the software, but the environment in which software operates together determines whether or not failure will occur.
Okay, yeah.
And these bugs are variously called non-deterministic bugs, Mendel bugs, some people have called them Heisen bugs, concurrency bugs. And so because of this, it is now possible to think about after a failure occurs due to these bugs, by cleaning up the software environment, you can continue to operate with the possibility of, under the same workload, that bug not giving rise to a failure. And so it is now possible to think about something that was unthinkable, that is, have a identical copy of software as a backup for protection against software failures caused by software bugs, if these bugs are Mendel bugs.
Yeah.
Because environment together with the workload determines whether or not failure will occur. And by changing to alternate copy, identical copy with the same bugs in a different box with a different environment, you can hope that no failure will occur.
Yeah.
Or by, in the same box, restarting that application or rebooting the node, you're changing the environment with the possibility that the failure will not occur again for the same set of inputs.
Yeah.
So now we are, in a sense, back to software behaving like hardware.
Yeah, that sounds very much like how we evaluate hardware.
And so we are now able to continue operation in spite of faults causing failures by using hardware-like techniques, if you will. And therefore, we are able to talk about software availability, not just software reliability. And the second related phenomena, should I continue or you
Well, this is fascinating, and but I do want a comment on that though. That's interesting. Is that, you know, so often, you know, you talk about the definition of reliability for hardware, and you know, one way to describe it is it's the effects on performance from the variabilities that are inputs, and the variabilities typically being manufacturing, use, and environment. And then, of course, kind of from my knowledge and experience, you know, that's very difficult, obviously, to apply that principle to software, because software doesn't have variability in manufacturing and variability of environment to some degree. You know, that's, and you're going to look at variability of use, but that's very hard to characterize and test, which a lot of times leads you to evaluating the processes software are made from to try to predict reliability. So, you know, what you're describing is very exciting. The idea of being able to now open it up to all these kind of tools and methodologies that have existed for a long time, apply it to software, because now we can consider the variability of use.
Absolutely. You know, and so, in fact, as you pointed out, the techniques such as accelerated life testing that have been used very much in hardware, we are now using in the context of software.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And somehow this stuff is not well known. We have published quite a few papers on this since maybe around 2007. But somehow this stuff is hidden from the community. And I would like very much the community to open up and learn about this, the notion of Mandelbugs and environment-related. And by environment is not temperature or anything like that. It is the other applications running concurrently in the same box, and the interaction between the application and the operating system, and interaction between the application, operating system, and the hardware.
Yeah.
So this is the environment in which your software is operating. And there are bugs which have clearly identified, class of bugs, that manifest themselves as failure under combination of the environmental conditions and the workload, not just the workload.
Yeah.
It opens up a whole new area of recovering after a failure.
Yeah.
It opens up the area of studying what are the different factors in the environment that affect the failure occurrence.
Yeah.
Can you control those factors so that failures are less likely to occur? Can you go develop a safety region, if you will, under which your software will operate. But then the combined hardware software modeling becomes very easy now. Hardware and software are
you can budget it in an allocation model, right? Probably similarly allow the budgeting to happen.
That's right.
Because so many times when I do an allocation model, software is just something I break off at the top of the model to get its own budget. And here's potential now when you're doing availability
absolutely.
To include it in.
So my latest book has large number of examples.
That was the next thing I was going to ask you for an example, but
a large number of examples of real life systems, and perhaps the most interesting.
What's the title of the book, so our users,
so
our listeners?
It's Reliability and Availability Engineering.
Okay.
With some subtitles there, and the authors are Trivedi, myself, and Bobbio, who is my colleague from Italy, and this is published by Cambridge University Press in 2017.
And the focus is entirely software?
No, the book is reliability and availability modeling in general.
Oh, okay.
And all kinds of plethora of all possible techniques, and each aided by real examples from real practical applications. Some of them are hardware only, if you will. Some of them are software only. Some of them are combined.
Yep.
And huge number of real examples. And perhaps the best example that is there is a system that IBM had developed for SIP, Session Initiation Protocol.
Yeah.
And I was in charge of developing models for that system. IBM wanted to sell it to Telco, and Telco asked for models.
Yeah.
And so these models that I have developed are fully described in the book, apart from many, many, many other applications.
Yeah.
But coming back to the second phenomena that is perhaps more recognized is what is called software aging and rejuvenation.
Now, this is interesting. Software aging. I want to hear about this because that's something I usually don't associate with software. Yeah.
And so first of all, I want to talk about two different types of aging that have been talked about in the literature. One type of aging refers to the fact that over a long period of time, you make a lot of changes, a lot of patches, and software becomes, it ages in the sense of very difficult to maintain and so on. That aging is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about aging in the shorter time scale. without having any changes in the software, but the software is operating in the environment again. Mm-hmm. And environment in this case is primarily operating system resources. And quite often what happens is that the software acquires these resources, application acquires those resources, and doesn't return them to the operating system. Okay. And the operating system thinks that this resource is being held by an application, some application, right. But nobody is holding that.
Wait, does this lead to why rebooting a system
absolutely.
Is often done?
Absolutely.
So you're effectively resetting the life of the whole system.
Yes.
So that answer to that question everybody wants to know. Why am I told to reboot yes. a system when the
exactly.
software is not working?
So one clear example of this is the memory leak.
Yep.
So dynamic storage allocation, malloc and calloc, applications acquire memory from the operating system, and quite often this memory is not returned to the operating system.
Yeah.
So even after your process or your application is long gone, operating system thinks this memory is held by somebody.
Yeah.
And so as time goes on, more and more memory goes into this black hole, depleted.
Yeah. Yeah.
And after some time, system might crash. In the meantime, it is slowing down.
Mm-hmm.
So this is performance degradation as well as crash that can occur. And memory is only one resource. There are many other resources that behave like that.
Yeah.
And so this phenomena has been called software aging. So software behaves as if it is aging. There is no real aging,
right?
But it behaves like that. And if that is the case, then we can do either reactive cleanup, like you were talking about, restart or reboot, but we can also do proactive. That is, before the failure occurs, if you can recognize that the aging is onset of aging, then you can do rejuvenation, which is proactive cleanup of the environment.
So what you're saying is the software itself, instead of depending on these different functions returning it, could monitor and say, I'm suspicious that you're not using it any longer, and recall it?
Yes.
Or,
exactly.
or to recall it and see if it complains or something like that?
So there are a lot of different ways of monitoring the various resources and projecting what the where this is going, and based on that, so there is a tremendous amount of literature being developed, and a new monograph is about to come out. I'm a book writer, you know.
Yeah.
So it should be 2020, within a month or two. Monograph is coming out. It's called Handbook on Software Aging and Rejuvenation, which has chapters on each aspect of this phenomena. In some ways, I think most everybody recognizes one way or the other and does some action. They may not call it rejuvenation. They may not call it software aging. But this is one of the few phenomena that just about every software in every place is subject to.
Every person, every 7-year-old to 70-year-old knows this on. You know, they aren't aware that they know it, but they know it. What's the first thing you do? You restart it.
Yes.
And you're addressing that issue specifically. You're starting its life over again.
Scientifically. We are addressing it scientifically.
Yes, yes.
And restarting that you're talking about is after failure.
It's reactive. No, it's people dealing with the failure. What you're suggesting is designers actually, you know, proactively addressing it, and customers will immediately be aware across the board of this product that is far superior and considered more available and reliable, where we've all been. It'll be very apparent to everybody.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm hoping that this handbook on software aging and rejuvenation will open up the. So people have been doing it without the scientific basis.
Right.
So if they do it with a little bit more thought, with a little bit more reading of this monograph, then perhaps they can do it better, and software will be more available.
Yeah.
Software is less likely to have crashes and so on. So I think very, very few phenomena like that universally applicable.
Yeah.
So we are putting a sort of a major milestone in that. This has been studied since 1995.
Yeah.
And my group since 1998 has been at the forefront as sort of the focal point of this particular.
Well, I'm excited to read that and look more into that, because that's such a basic concept that can have such effects across any kind of software. And it's funny, as you've been talking, I've been earmarking all kinds of questions I want to have. We can probably go on talking for like 2 hours. But one of the questions, I heard you say that duplicating, you know, you create a duplicate of the software so that when an issue occurs, you have the other one. To me, that almost suggests that the failure has affected that software, that copy. So I've never heard of anybody's, I've never heard before of the suggestion of duplicating an entire set of software to switch to. That to me almost implies that the first one has been contaminated in a way that can't be recovered.
No, so very, very good question. So, you know, 1970s, people pondered over this question, whether the redundancy in the way that we do in hardware can be applied to software. Because in hardware, we have identical copies backing each other up, right?
Right.
And it was thought, rightly so, in 70s, that this will not work in software. Because
right. The assumption is it would behave the same. The second copy would act the same.
Exactly. Yeah. But the thought I'm proposing right now is that the only model of software bug that we had mentally is now being called Bohr bug. Bohr bug is a very clean atom, named after Niels Bohr, who had a very clean atom model.
Yep.
So very clean model of a bug. What is the cleanness here? That under the given workload, either that bug will be exercised to produce a failure or not.
Yep.
Exactly the same way, consistently.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, the bugs that have been very clearly identified in a very large portion of, and I can tell you more about the details of this, that these bugs don't behave like that. It is not that software is contaminated, it is the environment that is contaminated in some sense. So environment together with the workload participates in exciting that bug.
Yep.
And so if I present a different environment with the same software,
yep,
identical, that's okay.
Interesting. So now that's the other element. You know, I was talking about, you know, I'm a hardware person, and, you know, that reliability to me, part of the definition is the effect of performance from variability of manufacturing, use, and environment. You talked, you know, but then with software, I've always kind of felt like that, you know, that's not the relationship. And now you've just turned me on to the idea that variability in use drives it. And now you just said variability of environment drives it too. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And so let me tell you, when I got this idea myself, when I saw the real designs by these IBM engineers for the SIP implementation on IBM Blade Center and WebSphere, which had these features, that identical copies were being backing each other up, restart and reboot were the primary methods of dealing with software failures, right? So I kept wondering, our literature tells me that this cannot work, this should not work.
Yeah.
And it is working. It is, and then I looked at many other designs. So people are, engineers are smart, they're doing this. I asked them, why should this work? And they don't have an answer.
Yeah.
So I pontificated over this.
Yeah.
And my answer was that it is these kinds of bugs that are different from what our mental model of bugs was there. And then I found in the software engineering literature, they have talked about these bugs, but they didn't go far enough with respect to these implications of these bugs.
Right. So that would be it if they could characterize it well enough for the proactive approach, right?
Let's separate the two.
Oh, no, okay.
So the bugs, these are both similar bugs, but
yep,
one kind of bugs, there is a gradual trend in error accumulation until failure occurs. When that happens, that is when software aging occurs.
Okay.
By contrast, another class, so we divide them into non-aging related Mendel bugs and aging-related bugs.
Okay.
So aging-related bugs, there is the opportunity to be able to monitor and predict when failure might occur, so you can take a proactive action.
Yep.
Whereas non-aging-related Mendel bugs, there is no gradual degradation.
Yep.
It is sudden still.
Yep.
And so for that, the only way is reactive so far, far as I can. Maybe new science will develop. But so this was my thought in 2007, 2008. And we wrote a very nice paper, only paper I've written with no equations, in 2007.
People like that. You get more readers.
Yeah. IEEE Computer Magazine,
yeah.
2007. I've written a paper with Grotke, one of my postdocs at that time, on this topic. And since then, we've been developing. So first thought is, okay, this is a thought, right? Now, can I prove it? How do I prove it? Well, let's look at real data. So I approached my friends at JPL and got a contract and got all the data from NASA satellite software.
Mm-hmm.
And onboard satellite software in operation, they have problem reports. And each problem report will tell you whether this is a problem caused by hardware or software. If caused by software, mm-hmm, what was the nature of the problem, what under what conditions this happened, and so on. So you can analyze that problem before, let's say it's a software problem.
Yeah.
And you can, so my thought was, can you determine whether this was caused by what we are calling as Bohr bug, Mendel bug, or aging related bug?
Yeah.
And I had my postdoc go through all these problem reports and could identify that about 40% of these problem reports can be attributed to what we call Mendel bugs.
Mm.
And independently, Alan Nicora at JPL went through the same data.
Yeah.
And most cases they agreed, some cases they didn't agree. So they discussed and finally agreed. Okay, this. And so we published that in 2008, 2010, I forget. In a conference called Dependable Systems and Networks, this complete analysis of problem reports from which what percentage of all eight satellite software, eight or maybe 11 onboard satellite software, and we concluded that about 40% of bugs are Mendel bugs,
yeah,
non-aging related Mendel bug. Then somebody can say, but this is highly specialized software. What do you? What can you tell me about garden variety software?
Yes.
So with another group, we went through the Bugzilla reports from Linux with the same idea,
yep,
that each Bugzilla report, can you analyze that report and determine whether this problem was caused by a Mendel bug or a Bohr bug or whatever. And we got very similar results, that Linux also has maybe 30 to 40% of bugs that can be solidly classified as Mendel bugs.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
So this is growing now, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I said, can we identify, so the roughly Mendel bugs are those that interact with the environment and the workload to produce a failure or not.
Yeah.
So can you identify what are the factors? So I had another set of experiments conducted. Actually, this was in MySQL. MySQL, we also did the same analysis for MySQL. And then one particular bug, which was identified as Mendel bugs, and that bug was removed by MySQL designers. And we actually inserted it back again. And they had also said under what workload this becomes a failure. Right?
Yep.
And it was not all the time, intermittently. So we then identified environmental factors,
yep,
that we thought will affect this. And we identified three factors. And we showed that, yes, indeed, the probability of occurrence of failure due on the same workload,
yep,
under this different environmental factors, you get a different answer.
Yep.
So this is the design of experiments conducted in the software context.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's so great. Wow, that's so neat. Well, I'm so glad I got a chance to get you on the podcast here again. Would you have been on the podcast before with Fred? And I'm very grateful to meet you and talk with you about this. And after we finish, we have to stop. It's been 20 minutes, and I'm going to keep talking with you about it. So thank you so much again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, this is fascinating. I hope more people get on the bandwagon of this Mendel bug and environmental.
Oh, it really is. Yeah. Well, especially for people like me who are hardware, you know, now hardware and software are practically synonymous in design with everything. And to be able to see a way to model it and bring it in with a lot of the models I work with, that it creates that link, and it's not going to leave me with having an allocation model with two separate blocks.
No, we should be thinking them together.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Well, to our listeners, we, you know, please comment. We love getting feedback on this, and thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.